Hello, this is the program, Not Just About Books, and today we're focusing on the literary, and perhaps even publishing, process. My guest is poet, critic, and literary sociologist Yevgeny Veshlian. Zhenya, hello.
Hello.
Let's start, perhaps, with a simple question. Well, after all, the year has ended and the current one has just begun. What are your impressions not so much of last year, but of recent times? And somehow they're distributed, they're divided, diversified. Well, starting, obviously, with February 24th of the second year, but nevertheless, from your point of view, were there any stages and, if we're talking not just about the general mood, but specifically about how these moods are reflected in literature?
Well, when the public space, yes, well, for example, in the 2000s, yes. With regard to literature, with rare exceptions, it functions, let's say, normally, yes, with minimal, so to speak, control, when we can actually say what we deem necessary publicly, and declare certain things, yes, well, declare our values, without looking back, yes, at any extreme literary factors. That is, it all works. As soon as this space begins to be controlled, yes, and it all works, and it is, so to speak, representative, and we can calmly sum up the year. As soon as something happens that has already happened completely, yes, as soon as it is partially, and now totally, controlled, and the statement conveying values, yes, if these values contradict, yes, imposed values, becomes dangerous, becomes impossible, or becomes a reservation, or becomes some kind of gesture from a new language, yes, a new type of it. And the languages in which we describe ourselves, in my opinion, stop working properly, right? That is, I want to say that you asked about changes, right? It seems to me that the fundamental changes are coming from here. Yes, I'm speaking a bit abstractly, but I want to.
Well, you mean to say that under conditions of censorship and under conditions of, so to speak, repressive pressure from the authorities, the literary process itself is, of course, distorted.
Yes, of course. That is, relatively speaking, yes. What do these gestures of modification mean now? Yes, well, there, yes, for example, someone. What does this mean now? It means certain compromises, yes, with the environment.
But you're saying that we are now in conditions of a certain division, right? Literature itself and the arts of writing itself seem to have divided. How noticeable, in your opinion, is this division? That's
the second point, yes, that I want to talk about. So, in response to the question of what has changed, yes, that is, relatively speaking, my summing up is in one cluster, as it were, and the discussion of their changes is in another, as you can see. Well, that's the second thing I want to say, yes, about what's changed. And this situation, yes, it leads to such a stratification, a splitting, yes, of spaces. That is, in the space, as if, on the other side, right?
That is, actually, in Russia, right? Well.
Yes, in Russia, yes, in Russia, all this, that is, the most interesting things, what's really worth talking about, operates either in a semi-public mode, yes, or in a mode that is almost completely non-public. And here a clear gap arises. Yes, how can I talk about what interests me and what I read in some public groups? Yes, because it's there, yes, or even read at all, because it came to me, right? How can I talk to you about this publicly now, right? If by doing so, yes, I could disrupt the consensus thanks to which this text came to me. That is, in other words, when your statement becomes a threat, well, or in that case, it is a threat to the person who, in fact, spoke out, publish the horse school? Yes, exactly. That is, if I say that in the work of such and such a writer, yes, I don't know now, that is, I still don't know if I can say which one, yes, but as if anti-war, yes, statements are hidden. And this is done, in my opinion, very skillfully and interestingly. Yes, we will get intellectual pleasure from this conversation, and the writer may get a prison sentence.
Well, it's clear, yes, it's clear that, publishers and authors are, of course, in completely different circumstances. And this, by the way, raises the question, well, do you follow, so to speak, some of the official part? Well, after all, you mentioned a big book. It was in both this year and last year. By the way, for some reason, I can't name a single major book laureate after the last few years. How interesting do you think that is? Or, for example, everyone talks about the changes happening at the Fiction Fair, which has always been a festival, a showcase of literature in general, or of book publishing in general. Does this mean that, let's say, this public, official, permitted? I guess we can say that now, right? Permitted part, on the one hand, it demonstrates the state of literature, but on the other hand, it's definitely a compromise and, in general, if it deserves attention, it's of a different kind, yes, with adjustments for what's happening in the country. Well, that's roughly what I said, if, well, in other words, yes, as if you were addressing me as a literary sociologist, I'm trying to understand how we can describe all this, yes, qualifying these phenomena. Of course, that is, conditionally, that we see, yes, we see, let's say, a
nonfiction fair. We see at the Fiction Fair, again, I can't name them, yes, how a certain publishing house, yes, at its stand, without declaring it, sort of displays and simultaneously hides certain books, yes, in the hope that, well, no one will notice them and do nothing about them, yes. But these books, undoubtedly important, yes, yes, they can't be, Well, in a public report about this fair, yes, they can't, so to speak, be named, they can get to the top, but they don't do anything with them in that sense, right? Well, let's say, yes, I looked at the best books of the year on Bookmate, yes, that's clearly not what we kind of mean, yes. But the best books of the year, they are going to be completely different.
Well, look, Zhenya, well, on the other hand, well, for example, and in this case, we can talk about the author quite calmly, but, for example, Oleg Alekmanov's book, Mandelstam's Love Lyrics, was published by the New Literary Observer, and Oleg, well, given the current circumstances, yes, he's even posting it, yes, well, on his Facebook page, so readers can view it. Another thing is how accessible it might be in bookstores. That's another surprising aspect. Yes, even those books that do appear are less accessible to readers. Moreover, I've heard that, I don't know, some publications by Mikhail Leonovich Gasparov were sold out or given away because, among the commentators, that same Oleg Alekmanov. Doctors believe that these books would be available for purchase before such final bans. That is, here it's also a matter of the field itself, yes, of the very structure of book publishing. Which, on the one hand, seem to relate to the conditions in which it comes to be, but on the other hand, something remains. My question was, to what extent is this supposedly permitted part to which we are accustomed deserving of attention? And, to put it crudely, does this mean, let's say, if we have in mind, say, fiction, does this permitted fiction, which is awarded, is it inferior, for example, to what has been published recently outside of Russia or not? To what extent does this not mean? Of course not. So, what I'm saying, right? I'm saying that the book itself, yes, and often begins to, well, play the role of a chess piece, right? That is, it is re-signified, that is, on one side of the border it will mean one thing, on the other side it will mean something else. It's being redefined. So, the border plays the role of a redefined entity, right? And, I mean, I want to say that, of course, those who say that, well, I mean, they're writing off, yeah, what's happening in Russia, yeah, they're 1000% wrong, because still, for example, yeah, we have Nekrasova, we have Vasyakina, let's say, yeah, on the one hand, yeah, on the other hand, well, there's a ton of young female writers, very interesting, precisely female writers, yeah, often, very interesting, who bring a new perspective to literature, a new vision and, a new subjectivity, and at the same time they're forced, to censor some parts of their texts, but the whole of these texts continues to be just as interesting, yeah, and just as relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where's Shipilova, for example, a wonderful young writer, yeah, and what about Bogdanova, right? Well, I mean, there are indeed many interesting authors who produce very interesting work, yes. And then, Alpina Publishing House, right? In my opinion, I mean, there are publishing houses that choose a form of compromise, yes, which does not reduce the quality and relevance of the books. In particular, yes, you could mention Alpina Publishing House in this sense. And every time you see, yes, some, well, new releases from this publishing house, yes, you think, well, they're walking on the edge, yes, they're still a little bit, yes, and somehow. And on the other hand, yes, how should we feel about this, right? What can we say about this? Quote, I don't consider myself entitled, yes, I don't think I have the moral right to somehow develop this topic of compromise, its price, and so on. In these, yes, that is, in this situation, in relation to these situations, I don't think, yes. Forceful, yes, yes, they removed it there, then brought it back again, yes, and I know that all these female writers, they walk, well, under, like, the sword of Domovic, so to speak. They have something to fear, and so on, right? I mean, what right do I have to talk about the lengths they have to go to in order to still be present in the public space?
Now, if we talk about what has become an event, as they say, on one side of the border and the other in Russia and beyond, in my opinion, a phenomena. I'm referring to Lev Danilkin's book Adam's Palace. This is, as if, beyond censorship, yes, in some completely parallel dimension, a book that has become an event both in Russia and beyond. Moreover, it seems that it is precisely thanks to the attention of readers who live outside of Russia, well, I don't know, Kerlinin, for example, yes, and this book, well, in my opinion, is a contender for the event of the year. Well, at least in terms of resonance, that's what I mean, too.
Yeah. Dot. Well, that is, in my opinion, and frankly, of course, here we have to think about why such an effect, right? What suddenly? Well, I mean, and the subject of the conversation is, well, why suddenly, right? It's unclear. Why Antonova suddenly? Why Antonova? Where? Well, why, right? And the subject itself, yes, which was debated. This is well written. This is poorly written. Yes, how could he have done it professionally? This really reminded me, by the way, of Ippolitov's old book, yes, and some scandal that was kind of blown out of proportion. Well, to be honest, the more I understand, especially now, that, our online discussions have unfortunately become very diluted in terms of what's important, so to speak, a trend, and what isn't, what's important and what's not, what's meaningful and what's not. They're more like projections of the problems that exist in, respectively, various communities, yes, actually, the remaining communities that left, yes, and these problems are kind of extra literary. Generally speaking, they're projected, yes, onto the object of the discussion. That's it. And in this sense, well, it seems to me that we are sorely lacking. If we're talking about the professional literary community, we lack a platform for ongoing professional discussions, ongoing, strictly moderated, lengthy, argumentative debates, because all of this, well, is dumped, yes, online, replaced by these modes of online discussions that have emasculated people's content. Well, which turn into scandals, they turn not into literary scandals, but simply into scandals. Because a literary scandal, as Sergei Ivanovich Uprainin once wrote very well, is something that somehow changes the system. Firstly, as we said, the system has broken down, yes, and on this side of the curtain, where we are, yes, it, or the borders, it has not yet settled down, has not established itself as a system, because we don't have this common discussion, yes, there is no place for it. And on the other side, yes, it's also broken, because there's no normal public space there in which this discussion can somehow develop normally, yes, and so what remains is that, what remains is this very broken space of networks in which this pseudo, as it were, discourse develops, often a pseudo-literary discussion about a literary phenomenon. It's very depressing and very, actually, well, it's just that when I see things like this, yes, I simply fall into pessimism, yes, and it knocks me out of my stride for a very long time. This simply devalues a lot of what we do. And this discussion about Danilkin, it, well, in general, in many ways, yes, it's this type of discussion, yes. Why then does the question arise? Yes, yes, what was irritating? Yes, why is it irritating? Yes, why?
And why is it attractive at the same time?
Yes, why? Well, you see, when we wouldn't get irritated by something that doesn't concern us at all. Right? And why? Why does this happen? Well, I think someone, by the way, wrote about this. Yes, that Antonov speech here is absolutely unimportant. Well, what do you mean? What about Anton? It doesn't matter. Yes, this is a certain figure of power over art. Yes, we all think intensely, and even when we're not thinking, yes, so to speak, no matter what we're thinking about, we're always thinking about the brick. Yes, we're always thinking about how, art relates to its internal autonomy and freedom. And various authorities. Absolutely different ones, to which we are all subject, various tactics of power, various strategies of power, and so on. We think about this all the time. Danilkin, essentially, right? That is, we see Danilkin's book then as a book dedicated to all this, right? And that's how we read it. And it's clear that what irritates us in this book, yes, and besides, yes, he also, well, allowed himself, yes, as it were, to express himself stylistically, yes, and this on this topic, and, in my opinion, intensified, yes, the irritation, yes, how he, that is, he himself, with this self-expression, sort of declared himself as some kind of authority, yes, and like, well, and how did he say, and what did he depict here, right? And, yes, and there is also this point, network optics, it is monstrous, right? That is why, of course, It needs to be replaced by something in professional terms. Network optics is monstrous in the sense that it constantly substitutes concepts. That is, close examination and explanation are perceived as an unambiguous justification of the phenomenon. And as soon as some major text appears about some phenomenon that we find unacceptable for some reason, or that we think is unacceptable, yes, then, seeing this, yes, we begin to say, how could he justify it? Yes, yes, he thereby confirms this, and so on. And Antonova, she is, well, kind of affiliated with the state, kind of a figure, yes, and the fact that on the one hand she is somewhat opposed, implementing her will, correlating her will with the will, as if, well, and so on, yes, and so all this overlaps, and we see what we see. Well, the network structure is generally ill-suited for Eurasian discourse. It performs completely different functions. And in general, we need to somehow come to terms with this, right? This is wrong, it's not necessary, we shouldn't resign ourselves to it, and I'll say it again, we're missing something, we all really need it. Yes, we have a wonderful project called Words Beyond Themselves, yes, a wonderful project instead of media. I'll still name a few things here, yes, that are small but very significant projects, yes. We have the Babel Publishing House, yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful project, yes, but well, yes, and Words Beyond Themselves strive to fulfill this role, this place, yes, for balanced discussion, yes, but something for organizing this environment, yes, a discursive environment for serious discussions, which, it seems to me, despite all the scandals and scandals, was a MUAA of late Soviet migration. I'm currently working on, as it were, writing another dissertation, yes, and I'm studying the context of the Cold War now and how people created magazines and so on. The main focus of these magazines was journalism, and of a very high, yes, intellectual level. That is, this community had a very strong demand for serious self-reflection, and what fulfilled this demand was, yes, journalism. It seems that now, if we look at magazines, yes, the new ones, yes, there's very little of that yet, and it seems like we don't understand. That is, as the editor, well, of the section in the New Jerusalem magazine, correspondingly, well, I don't really understand how to do this. Zhenya, what publications would you name? Well, mainly online publications instead of media and words outside themselves. And what other magazines would you name? Well, besides the New Jerusalem magazine. Well, I understand. Well, the fifth wave, of course, Osipova, yes. It seems to me that, well, conditionally, the space of the Russian Tolstoy magazine, in a certain way, all of it has roles, it's a kind of stage, there are certain roles there. And so the role of such a respectable, yes, such a magazine in the good sense, oriented towards traditions, fulfills the fifth wave magazine. There. And now, the New Coast, yes, it's also kind of interesting, yes. Ah, well, yes, well, I'm not even talking about Zerkalo, which is also, yes, published in Israel. And for a long time now, yes, it's a long time ago. But I want to say that Zerkalo, yes, and such magazines, yes, and foreign magazines in general, they are now moving, yes, to the forefront, yes, and how are such publications, well, due to everything we talked about, right? That is, they are moving to the center, yes, if, well, to use Novi's language. That is, in our center, it was more like magazines, if we're talking about paper, yes, paper magazines, more like magazines, yes, like, those published in Russia, yes, while foreign magazines, yes, they had more of a niche function. After 1922, this began to change. And it seems to me that now, for obvious reasons, yes, much more can happen in foreign magazines, and they can offer much more, well, Adequate reviews, yes, the review points are more adequately organized than in magazines that are, well, published. The thing about magazines is noticeable. It's very difficult to hide.
Well, yes. And on the other hand, there was quite a serious discussion that continued right up until recently. They died, finally the thick magazines are gone, who reads them, and so on and so forth. This, in general, is a layer of literature, in general, which is sometimes remembered, but sometimes they remember. Is there really, really, print? Is there really a new world coming out, or is there friendship of the people or not?
Yes. That's because these are professional niche magazines, nevertheless, yes, and they are still, so to speak, if we reassemble everything, and they again appear in this classic form, yes, of a thick magazine, then this requires it, yes. Well, like the genre of the novel, which is supposedly a novel at home, yes, we wrote something and say, and this is a novel, right? Well, something like that. So it is here, and therefore, well, by the way, here, Yevgeny Nikitin, let's say, yes, in words, beside himself, reviews precisely the magazine. He again, after all, the concept of a magazine, I'll interrupt myself, but it has quite significantly transformed. That is, we still shouldn't focus on these beautiful, so-called paper, yes, so-called publications, but they are certainly important. They create this, well, this legitimization, yes, of the whole process and so on, but still, like, we can't say, yes, that publications like Roar, for example, are less significant. Yeah. And or, I don't know, some kind of personal there, well, that is, some very small ones, yes, publications of some groups or, conversely, not groups, yes, but some in a certain aspect, yes, unfolding the elite process. But, or there is the same meta-journal, yes, which is all like, yes, that is, the further, the more it becomes some kind of window into contemporary poetry, yes. Yeah. It's a very small project, but it is big.
Yeah.
That is, just different mediums, yes, they suggest different strategies, but the resulting, yes, semantic, it does not become smaller because of it. Yeah. And in this sense, instead of the media, well, for example, instead of the media, yes, and this is the format, yes, which represents, the complex pole, the so-called complex, yes, pole of literature.
Zhenya, well, I wanted to ask about something else. Well, after all, we are already talking about February 24th of 22, but that's already 4 years ago. Within this experience, if you say so, we have been living in a state of war for these 4 years. And what does this mean in the broad sense of the word here? The point is not only that, well, we can talk about not just one war, that is, not only the war in Ukraine, yes, but also about various other military conflicts that have occurred during this time. But the main thing is that this state, this feeling of a completely different time, is still present in one way or another. Maybe not as hysterically, so to speak, people watch the news at certain moments, but this feeling is still there. From your point of view, this experience is completely, well, different, a qualitatively different time. What's there to say? We're not defining this boundary by chance. Yes, February 24th has changed. Recently. And what can we judge based on the books you've picked up, the ones you've read? Are there any changes, and how does this impact? Literature itself, the very problem of artistic expression? Oh, I think so. Well, that's what I notice, yes, it's burnout. Burnout. The most terrible effect of war. The most terrible thing isn't that we're, well, terrified, yes, but stressed, terrified, and so on, yes. The effect that war has on those not directly involved in it, right? Oh, well, not involved. I don't even know how best to formulate it.
Well, come on, behind the front lines, or, relatively speaking, in relation to what's happening now, we're all in the rear, right? So if we're not there, then we're in the rear, right? Or, for example, I live in Israel, yes, periodically I find myself, well, when bombs are falling on us, like they're flying at us, then I feel like I'm inside the war, yes. Oh, but since the bombs are well deflected and don't reach us, yes, it turns out that it's not really inside. And when the bombs aren't falling, and the home front service app, yes, it goes into sleep mode, then you kind of don't care, like the war is still there, but you feel like you're in the rear of this war. And what does it mean to live in the rear? I wrote a text called Chronicles of the Deep Rear. When it started, when it was October 7. So, and what does it mean? What does it mean to be, yes, in the rear? It means that you're kind of not in the war, but not really, and you look at it and your feelings change. And I'm saying that it's such a terrifying and powerful experience, yes, you hear about it all the time, every day, well, in short, everyone around you is being killed, that you, in the end, no longer feel the strength to feel it. And this powerlessness, that is, you understand that, well, that is, you understand it, you see it, but you simply don't have the strength to experience it. And this is burnout. And this burnout in relation to what is happening, yes, it seems to me that it has somehow begun to creep up, yes, it has begun to happen. This does not mean that everyone has become callous and everyone should be condemned for this callousness. This means that the books that were written last year, yes, or the year before, yes, already, they as if, and expressing them, they reflect this moment, well, like, of transition, the moment of transition, the moment of transition of sensation, yes, ought to some extent, yes, and the moment of transformation of the subject, yes? That is, what I want to say. When the first anti-war anthologies came out, they came out very quickly, yes, this was, in fact, and a lot was written about this, that this poetry, yes, of immediate, a presence, yes, and went through, well, social networks, partly and in their own experience, people were given, and from, well, like, to live through all of this in real time, right? And this poetry of real experience in real time, yes, it is very powerful. It was the first immediate reaction. Yes, it was, that is, there was no traumatic animata, but there was an immediate articulation, yes, of all of this. Then, yes, and already now, yes, we see, for example, Larissa Muravyova's book, yes, a very interesting autofiction that she wrote. We see Grigory Prorokov's book, shall we say, right? That is, we see books by young relaxers, which contain, yes, as if which show us, a person who has already, as if, yes, already lived through this, who is experiencing this change, these experiences, yes, which are transformed by them. And who is painfully trying to find himself in this transformation? And I won't say, that is, I consciously avoid and will continue to avoid words like trauma. Yes, we have experienced trauma. What do these words mean? They no longer, it seems to me, describe anything, because every country, generation, and every event experiences trauma, yes, it produces its own configurations, traumas. Here it's important to choose the right words for what's happening to us, or, for example, What's happening to young people? Yes, now, young relocates, yes, like those who are creating, in my opinion, a completely new type of texts, which, well, open up a new type of sensitivity. And this sensitivity is post-catastrophic sensitivity. And this post-catastrophic sensitivity, yes, it seems to me, is what, well, in the last year and a half, has probably been discovered in literature.
Zhenya, well, I'd like to perhaps emphasize one more aspect. I don't know whether you'll agree with me or not. It really feels like this is a war situation. You say, we're in the rear, right? That war becomes not some external event that affects you, but an internal one. Since we're talking about books, well, for example, Bereznoi's book, which is not called About War, yes, but actually about war. And at the same time, it's not about war, because absolutely personal events rhyme with war. They fit right in, breaking up with a loved one, or rather, a loved one who says that, so to speak, the relationship is over. This experience fits right in with fleeing to another country, trying to adapt to another world, and so on and so forth. That is, experiencing war is something deeply internal, yes, something that is part of the human soul. And it turns out that this is a war that breaks not only the world around us, but also the inner world of the person themselves. That is, they directly invade personal life, leading to catastrophes and ruptures. Well, Grigory Prorokov, whom you mentioned, writes about this with a slightly different intonation, more, let's say, sentimental, but, fundamentally, this is also a chain of ruptures that pass through a person, right? The strength of the experience is another matter. It seems to me that this is also quite important, if we're talking about the current moment and what literature is living by, that the very understanding of war is becoming completely different, right? That is, changes in the external world cannot pass by a person, by what's inside, what they feel. They simply affect the sphere on which they, it would seem, could rely, in particular, the personal sphere. That's why there is such a quantity.
Yes, yes. Well, that is to say, as if a person himself, yes, now, he is gradually, well, he, that is, well, as if they say globally, yes, we, of course, are witnessing a transformation, in principle, yes, as if a person, yes, well, how is it there, I don't know, when they're at the beginning of the modern era, yes, this new person was born, yes, and somehow everyone felt it, yes, somewhere there, I don't know, there in the 16th century, yes, now, we are clearly witnessing some kind of, so to speak, a new rift. And, it's as if a person, having lived through all this, can't remain who they were. They lose. Well, I was thinking about this yesterday, and I thought, look, literature. Well, there's Stepanova, yes, Focus, yes. Or Borskova's Sibylla, yes. Or even an Anne. Well, this is literature, which has a special relationship not only with the subject, yes, but also with language. And because it's as if there are, yes, words, yes, to which nothing else corresponds. We don't even know anymore, yes, as if. What these words mean, yes, that is, the world itself, so to speak, has gone, yes, in which they normally signified. And there are some things, yes, that seem to have no name, because, for example, yes, we are no longer able to talk about them, yes, because we have burned out, because we have fatally changed. I believe that war, and it's just, how can I say it, it reduces a person. And it reduces them physically, okay? Well, I mean, it kills. But even if it's like that, even if you're, let's say, sitting there, nothing falls on you, and there's no air raid siren and so on, you're still the same person, yes, or who saw this happen to other loved ones, yes, and you can no longer be the person you were. War has reduced you, if only because you've exhausted the resources to survive it. Zhenya, one last question I want to ask you. We've talked, sometimes about rather abstract topics, but perhaps in conclusion, what recent books would you recommend that have impressed you and that, in your opinion, are worth reading? Well, for example, yes, An Autofiction was written in West Berlin, yes, by Larissa Maraviva. We haven't talked about this text, but we could talk about it for a long time. It's Ovid, a novel by Yegor Zhurnov, a very young author, which, by the way, was published in Russia and doesn't seem to touch on, yes, current events, but it's that very post-catastrophic letter, Sibylla Borskova, yes, it's hard to list. Anyone?
Okay, so, Polina Borsky, Sibylla. Well, actually, I could name a whole host of other very different books. I mentioned Alexander Sobolev, and I think his collection of short stories, which has been higher for quite some time, is also worth mentioning. Here's Santa with the incorrect rhyme scheme. There. He also deserves attention, if we're talking about really old books. Well, in fact, some books are appearing now, which, it seems to me, are important not from the point of view, but from the point of view of optics, from the point of view of vision.
I forgot. I'm saying I don't like lists. Yes, Zemirovskaya, of course. Tatiana Zemirovskaya, yes. I mean, for me, any new books, yes, Zemirovskaya, any new books by Bushy, they're particularly events, yes, yeah.
Exactly. And Senya Buksha's novel. And, by the way, we're already seeing large-scale attempts at grand narrative, like, for example, Ala Rajinsky's book, Repentant Days.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I recommend some particularly sophisticated texts, yes.
Yeah. I understand that you're mostly thinking about how the statements are constructed, but it's curious, by the way, that even when we talk about Oleg Radinsky and when we seem to find ourselves within, generally speaking, a familiar novelistic and even drunken, so to speak, narrative, the foundation and support of this book are still real, real documentary impressions, or real story. That's absolutely amazing.
But here I want to say that this tradition, that is, relatively speaking, yes, and the attempt to wrap up, well, to write a novel, yes, to write a novel about what is happening now, yes, in my opinion I... No, the word is premature. A Soviet word and means absolutely nothing, yes, but in my opinion, all sorts of, well, many of these texts, yes, they seem to be breaking within themselves. Like, yes, and the line of rupture is experience, right? That is, relatively speaking, they strive to be what Ginsberg called intermediate literature. The author cannot resist this. And this resistance of the material, yes, is very visible, yes, well, in particular, there in the text of that same Radzinsky. Well, and, by the way, in the new novel by M. Sergei Kuznetsov, it is also there, I think.
You mean the meat grinder?
Yes, Moss's meat grinder, yes. That's there too. I'm actually following my own. I just started reading it. I know, Kuznetsov's texts very well and have been following him for quite a while. It's a very interesting text, which seems to be written in the genre, well, it seems to me Kuznetsov invented some kind of genre, yes, for himself. It's a very interesting genre. But what I see, yes, it's also this kind of, well, it's a struggle, yes, with the experience that doesn't fit, yes, into words and has to. And it's simply interesting, yes, that in itself is interesting. This is also a kind of sign, perhaps, of post-catastrophic writing, yes, I somehow formulated it and thought about it.
Zhenya, thank you so much for the conversation. Well, let's wait for new literature, and, of course, for the end of this state of war in which we find ourselves.
I hope that someday this will end in something. Not necessarily anything good. I
understand. Please, thank you.